Welcome to Live and Learn Podcast Season 4. In our four seasons, we hold cozy discussions on how we live and learn, accompany and encourage our community of growth mindsetters, how we respond to challenges of novel times with the help of soft skills, 21st century skills, both on a personal and a professional scale. We share our individual as well as science-based experience in a warm and supportive environment. What can four seasons of Live and Learn podcast mean to you? Whether you're jogging, commuting, or spending your leisure time, let a podcast be to your taste and music to your ears. Find yours, here is ours. Well, hi, a new week full of knowledge, full of discovery, hopefully, and full of research, which, as I know, you're amazingly into. And so what's new?
The world around keeps on spinning. The world around keeps on being disrupted, innovated, digitalized, and sets the new rules for communication and collaboration. 15 minutes ago, I finished a meeting with a colleague of mine who we were on the same certification course for trainers, and we were showing how we would train this specific course, and I used some kind of collaborative tool there to show how to set the collaboration, and she wanted to get to know more how it works, what incorporates, what are the horizons, what are the possibilities of using this tool. And she was just, you know, amazed. So you can do this. Oh, you can do this. What else do you do? Is this compatible here? Is this compatible here? The nice feedback that she said that, so you should be teaching this teacher training course for the digital tools. So I just invited her to the talk I'm going to be giving at Agile conference very soon on using digital tools for soft skills course. So basically how to marry the two, the soft skills and digital tools, so that we benefit out of it to the most.
Oh, interesting. And how to marry the two as well in terms of digital tools and collaborative tools, yeah, both of which can come together. In what you're saying, I immediately hear I'm spoiled. I immediately hear digital tools, digital coming from digit, finger, and then tool. So actually, tools are something that we use not to use our hands and fingers. This is an extra instrument. Yeah, a tool is something that humanity invented not to use our hands and fingers directly. Isn't that right? But then collaborative obviously comes from work together. Collaborare, work together with. And so how does it work? Let's see how it works in our modern world of digital collaboration, still using the tools as if our digits, fingers, were not enough, tools were not enough, and then we're inventing digital tools.
I'm amazed by the intro you made. I don't know, this flows so nicely. Collaborative, here I think brings completely new dimension to using tools, right? So when we had, I don't know, a spade would be a tool, right? So a spade, something that helps you to dig the soil, the dirt, right? So that you could put some beautiful plants there or additional crops, and not to be using your hands, right? So to make it better, quicker, more productive by means of tools. Then the combines were created, right? So the mechanized tool. So basically you're not doing this by your hands any longer, but you have the machine, the mechanism that cultivates the soil you will be using for your growing, for your agriculture. And now what we have something completely different when two or three people, five people from where they are can collaborate together to make it not only quicker, faster, and more productive, but also combining the ideas, combining the methodologies, combining perspectives, approaches, and cultural peculiarities, right? So, for example, what's the point of writing, of typing the letter on a paper when the other person who receives it can only answer to it, right? After it was read. But right now we have the collaborative tools or access even to Google file, right? Google Doc, when you can type in the same document together, creating one thing, sitting wherever you are on the planet. And the question is only who has access to get to this tool, who is invited to join this specific collaboration, who joined and who contributed. So this becomes the question, which is much more important than the very tool we're using.
When we talk about how it all started with just creating a document, for instance, or creating a work of art, meaning creative writing, for instance, by one person, or even by a group of people who work together, being physically in the same room, and then sending this piece of work out to others to proofread or to comment, and then to send back. It all takes time, and it's not collaboration. Now, while what you are talking about is in the same time, in the same room, but in the same virtual room, or using the same collaboration or digital collaboration tool, allowing authors to become co-authors, co-creators of this piece of creative writing, a project, a tender project, whatever people are working, a scientific article, whatever people are working on. And I like your idea about not the tool being the most important, but actually collaborators, people who are together working on this, people who agreed to be in this together, as you like to say about ownership. So this is the case. People who took the ownership, who took co-ownership of a project, get the chance to create this project together by means of those tools. What are some tools that you are using, or that maybe you're recently excited with in this world of digital collaboration?
So I think that it is a very prolonged period that we are trying to get to know and keep up with the technology that exists already. And it all started, of course, with, for me, the very first collaborative tool was the shared Google Doc, then shared presentation, again, Google Slides, whatever it is. Years ago, that was more or less the only one. And now, for the last couple of years, there is the boom of those tools that are there and that are widely used both for business, for training, for corporate training. And now it is getting into the university more and more. And one of the main ideas that if we need to teach the 21st century skills where collaboration communication is the central part, so that means that whatever we're teaching, we're supposed to be doing through the means of communicative and collaborative approach. So it's like no doubt any longer, nobody discusses this in the business schools here, that like lecturers do not work any longer. Nobody's ready to sit 8 classes per day listening to a lecture. Like there should be the learning, there should be collaboration, there should be the outcome, there should be something created. And here is the question that co-creation comes from collaboration, which comes on top of the communication, right? So we somehow are at the core of bringing communicative approach to universities, to the class, to the topics, to the disciplines, and being the point of entry to collaboration for the pre-service students, right, before they enter. As we're talking about the tools, well, of course, we all are now with the Skype, Zoom, all the video calls, MS Teams, which is much more than a video call, which is a system. And there is a question that here you have this big digital divide of those people who are digital natives, digital experts, and digital nomads, right? Depending when they were first exposed to technology. You can endlessly talk about millennials, zillennials, Z generation, Y generation. Yesterday we were discussing, so which year are you? Are you millennial or are you what? And then like, no, I had a normal childhood without all the technology. I used to be going outside and nobody would ever know where I am. The exposure to the video calls doesn't necessarily bring you to collaboration immediately, right? So this is like more communication level still. If you are negotiated, for example, using Zoom or any other video platform, in my understanding, this is still the communication part. So it's not still the collaboration, but the collaboration would be when we're working on the same document together or we're discussing the same strategy project, we're doing the analysis, or we are creating any kind of the result, tangible result, right? What could be a document or what could be a draft or to anything together. And then you have the subtle overlap with the collaboration. And here, why the digital online teaching would be a great example of that, we discussed that with the teaching online as emergency doesn't really mean that this is the collaborative and interactive teaching. So if the person or a teacher just reads the slides or reads the lecture as it used to be, I don't know, 5, 10, 15 years ago. So basically to bring collaboration into the classroom, that means that there should be people who have the same task and who are working on this task at the same time, seeing who adds up what. You can do the Google Doc, right? It was interesting how we used Excel files to work with the reading tasks. For example, if you're taking the IELTS reading example, I don't know, on the topic that you're working, it was a nice experiment last semester that we put the same text into Excel sheets, to multiple Excel sheets in one document, team one, team two, team three, team four. You have the tasks there and you set the groups into the breakout rooms and the students in their pairs or trios are trying to read it out loud, to find the concepts, to understand how it works, so on and so on. So you can also do the reading tasks collaboratively, and they just pick and put the words in bold, trying to match the answers or trying to find to name the paragraphs, whatever it is. Me as a teacher, I was able to be in the same document and see what the team 1, 2, 3, or 4 was doing, how many correct answers did they come up with, and what did they manage to get. And then you can see that the task is done through the team while they were communicating and while they were collaborating the same document and while I was watching everybody, all the teams, work in progress. That was a nice example of something that is very difficult to implement, to do a reading task or to teach reading skills online to a group of 15, 20 people in the same time. What was the example that was just two semesters before with the same discipline was that we had to print out 20 copies for 2-3 pages each to everyone How am I supposed to teach that collaboratively if everybody has its own copy and can only work with that?
Well, I remember back then, before going green and going digital, we would cut a printed page into fragments and organize group work. But that's in an offline class, and it's possible to do that. All these techniques work wonderfully. But as soon as we move online and we move digital, then also we go green, which is an incredible advantage of this process of a shift from an offline classroom to hybrid and online education models. So then we have other opportunities to try out and see how they work, if they work with certain groups, if they work for us as teachers. It is amazing. It is so inspiring, really, to see how things work with the perspective of a wish to create a collaborative process of working on a project. Yeah, if you just want to read, okay, use that old-fashioned overhead projector, project one text for a group of people. It's still going digital. It's boring. It doesn't work. It doesn't bring any good fruit. Then with a perspective of wishing to give more, to organize a collaborative classroom, to give people a chance to taste this fruit of group work, and then to bring it with them wherever they want to work later. Let's link another episode here about who's going to teach soft skills, if not language teachers. And yes, this is something we are excited about as language teachers, and we can practice that and bring that into a classroom as well as into a hybrid or online classroom.
Yeah, and whenever we have the online or hybrid classroom, the question will reappear again, how to do this in the online environment, in the digital environment, with the people present. So basically, you need to bring them into the same digital environment where people from other countries are online. Another thing that as a tool, for example, you can think of is the Padlet, that you can create, prepare before the class, what kind of the questions do you have or what kind of the topics do you have? And then everybody adds up their answers. It is widely used for feedback topics after a class or after a training, so that everybody just says, oh, it was so wonderful to hear, blah, 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 blah. I would like to have more of blah, 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 blah. And thank you for organizing it. But as well, you can try to do all the creative writing preparation for that. You can do this problem solution there. You can do, again, all the types of the analysis when you're just putting like strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And then everybody writes how it works in their own situation, because it allows to upload the pictures, maps, video, data, every type of media, so you can try to bring it to completely different levels. So it's not only, you know, a feedback wall, but also a co-creation tool, because in the end you can just download that and see the fruit, the result. So for example, the very first class that I'm having with the international students in in my mind right now, the discipline, which has two groups of 20, 25, 30 people each. So they're all new to me and they come from all over the world. And basically, in order to get to know each other, and this is the intercultural competence class, I created the Padlet, which is a map. They can put their pin, where they come from, add their picture, name, and answer the questions that I put there. So where do you come from? Which languages do you speak? Where are you local? What kind of culture do you represent? And all these kind of questions, so that we get to know each other and then the students can see each other. So that would be a nice question, like find the people on this map out of 25 who speak the same language or whose parents come from the same country, or I don't know, who have the same background, or I just know, whatever you might want to do. So then it becomes the map of our group. And what is nice for me is also that I can then download this Padlet with their faces, with their names, with their answers, and have the, oh, this is my class. This is who I'm going to be working the next semester. And whenever I need to remember also Amir, where does Amir come from? Is this that Amir or this Amir? Because that's already the third semester. And I've had like, I don't know how many people with the same name. So I need to be bridging and associating this specific person, personality, identity with the name, picture, and his little story. Because if it is just an avatar which says Amir, it doesn't say anything about it to me. So basically, this get to know each other activity is already the first type of the collaboration, when it's not only just entering the data, but also trying to find something that works for everybody. And for example, if you are building trust, or if you are building the relationship, this is the first class for the semester that you have, the students might not know each other. They do not have the same situation as we had, as we are going through all the classes every day. We go to the canteen, we go to, I don't know, some people go to smoke outside, some people go after class. No, they don't. They live in different countries. They see each other and they don't know who they are talking to.
So it's also a warming up activity, not only for a certain class, meaning lesson, but also for all the group work that is going to happen during the group course or during a course which might be a semester long, a year long, and so on and so forth. I would probably add here for those of our listeners who might be teaching young learners or in a school environment where they have to shift or they had to shift to online or hybrid, a similar activity with the same digital collaboration tool could be used as a warming up activity for kids, for instance, and you don't have to ask specific questions like in the international environment, but mark yourself if you were born in winter, spring, summer, fall. Mark yourself if you are taller than or shorter than 150. If you have long hair, short hair, whatever. Then as an introduction to a topic, depending on what part of language you're teaching today, it might be like for present perfect, what comes to my mind is mark yourself if you have been to Europe, Africa, America, whatever continent you might wish, and point it on the map, who, and now find, go around and find someone who has visited this continent, or have you ever seen this or that animal, have you ever been to, and so on. So this can also be introduced as part of a classroom activity, introducing language topics, warming up for a lesson or a course, and so on. Just using our creativity and keeping in mind, there is this digital tool that can be used for collaboration, that can be used for creating interpersonal relationships among the students of my class. That could work and is working if we have this in mind, yeah, being in the know of these digital tools and then knowing how we could apply them. Not necessarily, but having this in mind gives us good perspectives here.
Right now, there are so many of those collaborative tools that basically for every fantasy you may have, for any creativity you may have, there should be a good formulation. What would be the best tool to show it? And what would be the best outcome from this learning stuff? Am I using it just so that I use it? Or what is the learning outcome there? And this is a very big topic because as there are thousands of those tools out there right now, should we be sticking to the same tools that students already know? Or should we introduce new tools so that they know all the time that the situation is changing, that there is new tool, new feature, new something, so that they get around quicker different digital tools? because how much comfort should be there about those digital things?
Moreover, what are we doing this for? Not to get students bored, to get them around, to get them used to this changing world, or just because we are curious? Well, also, all of these are valid motivations for doing that, but being aware of why we are doing that, yeah, okay, I found a new digital collaboration tools and I'm bringing it into the classroom immediately. Well, I should think a bit, probably, and ask myself, is it good time? Because just the fact that I'm excited about this tool does not mean that the students who already had a new tool during the last lesson are ready for a new tool today. Maybe I should wait. Maybe I should find the right moment and the right topic and the right attitude of the students as well to get this tool. And then they love it. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe they will be as excited as I am, maybe not. Being ready to all this stuff and, yeah, knowing why we're doing that, not just out of pure curiosity, but also accompanied by curiosity with the idea of what for.
In the university format, this is all the tools to show that collaboration is learned, that there is the rules, etiquette, netiquette, yeah, the etiquette for the net, digital etiquette, and that there is the new productive ways of doing stuff that has been around and was not that productive as it could be right now. And the main idea of using those collaboration tools, like, again, you have Jamboard, you have Miro, you have Mural, you have so many of them, and depending again which operating system you have, for example, the Google and Microsoft, who are competing one to another, to which we all benefit because we have all those fantastic tools. But again, if the company that you're working for example, uses Microsoft environment, then most probably they would be using Miro and Mural and Kahoot and I didn't know all those forms, Microsoft forms, as the means for this. But while you were doing Google, you would be most probably going to Jamboard, to the products that Google provides. And the question is how not to get lost around all those.
That's why the question is, could you tell more about some of these tools that you're currently using not to get lost?
Sure. For example, I'm only learning the Microsoft environment. That's the third semester since I was introduced to Microsoft, teaching through Microsoft Teams. And they do have a vast number of those things. And I still don't feel 100% native with them because to me, they're not really super obvious, but they are an ecosystem. And when I understand that all my students from this university are using them every day long, all the semester long, they are exposed to them and they are signed in for them already. So I don't need to ask them to sign for the program, to wait till everybody gets into and lose the precious time. So then, of course, I will be using the Teams environment tools. However, those who are not having those access might feel left out, just like the people who are not having the access to Clubhouse feel left out. Do you know actually that the buzz goes away and they're like 60%? I don't know. I read an article that some crazy percent of people just went away from the Clubhouse because the hype is gone. But I come back to the Google environment and the collaboration. They are one of the things that I'm happy that is super accessible, super simple, and super clear to use is Jamboard, which is installed, pre-installed, or which is a part of the ecosystem for Google. This is just a whiteboard, which you can scroll just like the presentation. And that was a revelation to me because I always do my slides very interactive. There are a lot of the links inside. There are a lot of the videos, or I don't know, some kind of the empty tables that I do so that the students fill it in. And then I try to invite them to the presentation so that they write something there. It was a bit awkward, but it worked out. And now I'm using the Jamboard for that. And most probably I will be using it much more because it looks like a presentation where everybody can contribute. And to me, that was a, I don't know, just slides 3.0. You know, they upgraded to the version 3. You can have the slides where you're just showing something. For example, my next intercultural competence lecture would start, of course, with presentation. What's the courses? Who am I? What am I supposed to do? So then asking the expectations from the course already through interactive tool. Then asking each other where they come from, what's their culture behind it. So actually, by the way, what we're supposed to learn. And then what intercultural competence, and then I have this slide, let's move to Jamboard from now on and fill in what is the, I just took the intercultural competence model, cleared it out, put only the categories for that. And now students are able to put the sticky notes of the ideas that they have and then categorize them according to those parameters that I want them to categorize, and there could be as many as possible. They could be colorful. We could, I don't know, formulate it better or upgrade them, cluster them together, and they can see that their knowledge, pre-existing knowledge, could be good enough, or we will see actually where they are, the specific people, how much they can fill this empty chart with their ideas. In this way, I'm eliciting the information from them instead of showing, oh, this is the IC model created by in the year, and that became the major cornerstone of the intercultural communication theory or practice or whatever.
This is something I love doing in the beginning of every course with a new student who is a beginner in a language, be it English or Italian, even better with Italian, because when people say they want just to start learning this beautiful language, and in the first lesson, I already say, well, you already know a lot of the Italian language. Let's see what you know. Oh, I don't know anything. Well, let's see. And then people come up with words like cafe, pizza, cappuccino, and then all the musical terms, and then some of the sport terms, and so on and so forth. All the, as you said, pre-existing knowledge that people might not be aware of, but it's very convenient to make it vivid with the help of digital tools, not necessarily collaborative, but as well, in case of an individual lesson, it can be already collaboration with a teacher. And you just make it vivid with the help of those boards that this is what we have now. And it's not tabula rasa. It's not just a blank page that we have to fill with something. There is already existing knowledge that we can actualize and use later.
Yes, and we can actualize, use later, and bring in and check. So, for example, the Kahoot as a tool. So I think everybody loves it because it brings color, sound, it brings competitiveness, it brings the mode of you're being a part of a quiz, just like something that we had as kids, who wants to be a millionaire. When you have a quiz show, you have timer, you have the, so what's the answer? And then you have the feeling of being excited in the end, right? Because you have all the hormones in a competitive mode. I need to say that for university students, it works as well because they're super tired of every day, you know, going through slides and slides and slides. You just can add questions for the topic as a test after the class, for example, or closer to the end of the class, or maybe it's a brush up in the beginning so that they compete as a teams or individually and answer the question. 30 seconds for a question, more than enough. However, if these are quite a higher order thinking skills questions when they need to analyze, where they need to, you know, to find the solution or compare or leave something out of these things. Then it becomes appropriate to the university level. So for example, when we had our employability course and to get students prepared to the format of the exam of multiple choice, which is not like choose the ABCDE. No, there was a great level of thinking before you understand how the question is formulated. And so for example, which of the answers is not the example of this theory? So you need to know the theory, you need to understand how it works, and you need to read all the examples, and which are all more than valid, then understand which is not the example of that. That's a lot of thinking. When you put this on Kahoot, then you had a lot of feedback that, oh gosh, that's a lot of thinking for those 30 seconds or 1 minute or whatever it was. That was quite challenging, and I had to think much quicker, much clearer to find the answer. So this is how the exam is going to work. Well, yeah, pretty much. That is a collaborative thing if a group of three needs to decide upon one question under the time limit.
Yeah, it's just beautiful. And I would have another question here on how students who come from cultures that are not very much into competition, exposure, collaboration, deal with these digital collaboration tools. Have you got any experience with your students?
Last year, I had the soft skill course with two groups. Altogether, there were 120 people who signed up for the course. Okay, not everybody came in, but those people who were working, so they were from 22 countries. So I had a maximum pleasure of intercultural communication last semester. And I really hope that the semester is going to be the next course with as diverse audience. And I need to say that the culture is dynamic, and we cannot just put a label, oh, they are not from incompetitive culture. Well, it's all about the person, it's all about the environment they grow in, their adaptability, their learnability, their openness, what they trained, what they were exposed to. The main thing is that since they are studying in Germany, they do understand that this is a little bit different approach than they might be having in their countries, but this is why they're here. This is why they pay money to have something different. Therefore, this is a question, who adapts?
Would you agree with the notion of early adopters, talking about these students who choose this education environment as their higher education process? Not generally early adopters, I would rephrase probably. Are these early adopters of digital collaboration education process?
We are early adopters because we are trying to use them, trying to implement, and trying to show what's possible. And they are the early recipients. And when they understand that this is how they can do their group homework together, because that saves time, saves effort, and brings better result, well, then the task is there.
Another question would be if teachers who work away from Germany in those cultures that are considered to be less competitive than others. Yeah, and then I agree with the notion of a lot of shift that is going on in all cultures, across cultures, because the world is getting more and more globalized. And still, I wonder how teachers who are early adopters in any cultural environment are bringing these tools into their classrooms. I would probably ask, guys, if you are listening to us from a culture that you know is considered as less competitive than Western cultures, but if you come from a teaching and learning environment where learners are more up to listening to a teacher and learning from what a teacher is bringing into the lesson than learning and coming back to an examination, checking the knowledge. How do you, if you do, implement collaboration in the classroom? And how do you, if you do, implement digital collaboration tools? Let us know. It's so curious.
I can say as well that there is a lot of very exciting research about it, and every day I get amazing articles being published in like these days, the freshest ones, and the research is focused right now on trying to measure how to assess the soft skills, how to assess how collaborative the class was, motivation, satisfaction from the online courses, both within teachers and students. All of them are based on the hard evidence, on the polls, on the questionnaires, on the results, and so on. So, for example, the framework of soft skills and digital skills being measured in the final exams, for example, in different universities, in different cultures, in different countries. So they show the difference of how the exams are built or are conducted in different universities on the same faculty. Yeah, this is really exciting to learn. This is the time when we have the access to that and we can collaborate very quickly in adding to this research and then to this result. There is a lot of data that we can leverage from using those tools. For example, in Quizlet, the digital cards that you flip around when you're trying to learn some notions, it can be used for vocabulary, trying to revive this. When I send my students there that, well, guys, it is 21st century, you don't need to be writing that all in your paper notes, because how many times can you use this? So here is the digital vocab tool. You know what they say? Wow, this is interesting, nice, and so on. And then I said, you can create your own. You can get the ones that exist, merge them together, take everything that you already know so that you don't repeat all the same stuff again. And that would be your own personal thing. But you know, guess what? You can try and see how many they are on the topic, and you can see how much more you can learn. They're shocked. Then they come to the next class and say, why most of the facts that I found are translated into Polish? What you mean? Why Polish? They say, well, I opened the pack on, for example, what was that? The classroom management. So something like that, that was the topic. And they said, I opened 1, 2, 3, 4 packs, and all of them are English translated into the Polish. You know why? Because somehow the Polish teachers were the early adopters of this platform. And most probably, a lot of them were exposed through some conferences or some continuous professional development, and that they know that it exists. They know how to use it, and they leverage it through the classes. And it became a norm for them, maybe, right? This is my guess now. But this is true, that there is so much of the material created by Polish names of the teachers.
Depends also on which subjects people learn more. Okay, can you guess which language the Latin quotes are translated into mostly on Quizlet?
How am I supposed to guess that? Seriously, Italian?
Yeah. Guess why? Because Latin is taught very much and very often in Italian high schools. That's why. As simple as that, just for frequency, yeah. There are other languages as well, but most frequent ones are translated into Italian. There is more need because there is more frequency. And also some teachers more classes and more early adopters of these digital tools.
Yeah, so this is all very exciting topic, and we are heading there with gigantic leaps, one after another. One of the interesting topics that on BISIG Facebook, there is the question that is moderated every month. And the question was, what did you learn from shifting into online education a year after we had to teach massively? And everybody tried to formulate their own gain, their own, you know, learning outcome as teachers, trainers, coaches, you know. That could be a good research as well. So what did we actually learn as teachers? Some people went to more abstract and more generalized answers of attitude, being open, being resilient, and so on. Some of them went more into the skills that they learned through this. And some of them went to tools. So what did they learn as a tool over this time? Because there are so many and so exciting. And this is what actually constitutes the competency, right? So the competency comes from three cornerstones. What do I know about it? How can I use it? And what's my attitude to using it? Am I open, tolerating? I don't know. Am I curious? And how do I go there? So this is what we learned, is that the digital and collaborative competency rose amazingly over the last year, at least from what I see and from the circles that I'm in.
What I learned is also being minimalistic about that, with all the wide range of tools, being aware, being minimalistic, staying curious, learning more about what exists and what comes up to exist, and still keeping the purpose in mind. Not just taking any tool and bringing it into the classroom, but choosing the tool that serves your purpose and bringing exactly this tool into the classroom, realizing what you're using it for and how useful it can be for your students.
So we have all the opportunities out there, all the capabilities in us, the companies fighting and competing each other, who provides a better, quicker, more UI UX based tool, more user-friendly tool. So all we have to do is to stay curious and live and learn.
Live and learn.
Curious about what we discuss next? Please subscribe to Live and Learn podcast and join our community on social networks. Live and learn.